You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I visited Ihumata over the weekend and last night looking to volunteer at the legal tent set up out there. Following this, I thought it might be interesting to talk to someone about the history of protest movements in New Zealand and whether this has changed over time. I spoke to Paul Moon, historian at AUT, about this. Do you think the nature of protesting in New Zealand has changed substantially over the years?
Probably not. It's probably the same that it's been for decades, which is, in this sort of case, people protest either by approaching a venue or, in this case, occupying it, and typically start out very peacefully. So it's fairly similar to what's gone on in previous occupations elsewhere.
Yeah, that sort of leads into my second question. So in regards to what's happening at Ihumata at the moment, do you think this is quite similar to past protests then?
It is in a way. What makes this different, though, is this is taking place in effectively a post-settlement environment, and that's quite important. So previous protests have either been in anticipation of a treaty claim or in conjunction with one or incidental to one. This really is after the settlement process in this region has been completed, and also it's not a claim for Crown land, it's a claim for private land, so there are some quite important distinctions in this particular protest.
Yeah, and do you think it being post-treaty sort of shows that there are still issues with the way treaty settlements are being approached?
Oh, very much so, and I think this is something that most politicians have been reluctant to acknowledge. There's a distinction between a settlement and a resolution, and you can look at it perhaps in terms of a divorce, that a divorce between two parties is a settlement, and after the settlement, that's it. But that's not to say that the feelings between the two parties are suddenly resolved and everything's fine. And in a way, these sorts of things are like divorces but writ large, that the sense of grievance and the sense of injustice just gets transmitted from generation to generation precisely because it hasn't been dealt with. So you can have a legal settlement, but that doesn't resolve that sense that an injustice has been done.
And back to protesting, I think the protests at Parihaka really led the way, both in New Zealand and internationally, in creating this whole idea and concept of peaceful protesting. For those who don't know, would you be able to describe what happened there?
In a way, it's the fate of a lot of protests of this nature. They start out peacefully, and being peaceful turns out to be quite an irritant in some cases to the authorities. And so cases like Parihaka, Bastion Point and elsewhere, what eventually happens is the authorities respond to peaceful protests with force, and becomes a very unequal relationship at that point. You've got one group saying, we're trying to do things peacefully, another group saying, well, look, we don't approve of what you're doing. The only way we can counter that is through force.
Do you think the introduction of the Bill of Rights in 1990 really changed the way people approach protesting in New Zealand?
Probably not. I don't think if you talk to many of the protesters there, they'd be aware of the specific contents of the Bill of Rights. I think it's just almost an impulse reaction to an injustice. They feel that something wrong has been done. We have a responsibility to act to see if we can rectify it. The problem, of course, is the law can't sanction its own breach. So protests of this nature, by definition, are challenging the law. And that's where, obviously, it becomes much more complicated.
Yeah, of course. And what protest in New Zealand's history do you think had the most impact or affected the most change?
It's very difficult to know because the protesters themselves will claim substantial change was brought about through what they did. You can certainly look at Bastion Point, I think, as an example of a very successful protest, one carried out entirely on principles of natural justice.
Yeah.
It wasn't designed to necessarily attack other people or some other political motive. It was entirely based on the fact that the protesters knew that what they were doing was right. The same with Springbok Tour protesters. Those who opposed the tour felt what they were doing was right, and they claim, I know some of them claim some credit for bringing down the apartheid system in South Africa. Whether or not that's absolutely true, we'll never know, but certainly some protesters feel that what they do does affect change.
Yeah, and what role do you think social media has in changing the way protests develop and evolve nowadays?
Oh, in enormous ways. Firstly, of course, it enables mass communication almost instantaneously and in a way that gets to people that conventional media wouldn't necessarily. So could, 20 or 30 years ago, if you wanted to organise a protest, you might have leaflets, you might even have a notice in a local newspaper or something, and you might be phoning people and trying to get dozens of people to turn up. Now you can literally reach hundreds of thousands of people instantly. And so it's much easier to get people in a way to consolidate around a cause, both in attending and also in using their respective networks. So if you send a post a message to one particular group, they can then obviously disseminate it to their group and off it goes. And so getting many thousands of people supporting a cause is much simpler nowadays, depending on the cause, of course, than it was two or three generations ago.
Yeah, and how important do you think protest is in enacting change?
A lot of people would say that protesters are troublemakers and they just simply cause a nuisance, but I'd look at it the other way around. I'd say if you don't have any protests at all, ever in a society, then the implication must be that that society is perfect, that there's nothing worth protesting about.
Yeah.
We've never achieved a perfect society. So although protesters often break the law, sometimes breaking the law is necessary for achieving a natural justice outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You can look throughout history. I mean, John Milton, the great poet, was put in prison for his views. Martin Luther King was imprisoned and persecuted for his views. So there are these people who really led to advances in society being punished because they had to breach the rules of the day in order to fight for a greater good. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that every protest fights for a greater good, and some of them don't, but there are occasions where the society isn't right and no other mechanism seems to fix a particular problem, and so people resort to protest as a means of trying to address it.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's an important part of our sort of democratic society as well.
And it has to be, because, as I say, if we don't have it, we're presuming that the state is perfect.
Yeah, so what struck me while I was out at Ihumatao was how peaceful it really was, from the protesters themselves to also the police presence there. Hopefully a resolution can be reached eventually that works for all.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.